Hello, and welcome to the Slow Style Home Podcast. If you don't want a cookie cutter generic home, and instead you want a beautiful, meaningful home that's layered with personality, then you are going to be so inspired by the conversations we have on this show. We talk about why the environments we create matter and how to set up our rooms to evoke specific feelings and experiences that are right for you wherever you are in your life right now. I'm Zandra, your host and creator of the Slow Style Home Framework that teaches you how to make really thoughtful and informed decisions about your home rather than chasing current trends that may not last or staying stuck with rooms you hate, feeling overwhelmed with too many choices. Right now, when you join our monthly membership, the Slow Style Society, you'll get a personalized deep dive into your vision of what a dream home looks and feels like. And together, we'll come up with a plan on how to achieve that. If that sounds pretty awesome to you, go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society for all of the details. I'll tell you a little bit more about it later on. Right now, let's just jump into today's episode.
Welcome to Little Yellow Couch. We're Karen June
and Zandra, your hosts for the Style Matters podcast. You're listening to our third season of interviews with some of the best stylists, designers, artists, and all-around tastemakers in 2016.
This podcast is for all of us who are obsessed with creating spaces in our lives that reflect what's most important to us. We call it Fearless Decorating, and we're delighted you're here.
Before we get started, we'd like to introduce you to this week's sponsor, Color House Paint. We are really excited about this company on so many levels. First, their color palette is fantastic. It's nuanced, vibrant, and layered. The palette of 128 interior hues is developed by artists, which makes choosing the perfect shade for your project a fun experience. Plus, they offer free online color consultations on their website. Second, they are committed to producing products that don't hurt you or the environment. For us, that means we can paint our homes without getting headaches from toxic fumes because their paints contain no VOCs, chemical solvents, or reproductive toxins. And finally, Color House is a source of creative inspiration. They have a wonderful blog full of DIY projects, and they are active on social media, inspiring all of us to add color to our lives. Find out more at colorhousepaint.com.
Today we are talking with the country's top color connoisseur, Leatrice Iseman. Lee has had a long career as a consultant for major companies on color psychology for branding and design, written numerous books on the subject, and is the executive director of the Pantone Color Institute. Part of her job at Pantone includes leading the team of experts who choose the much-anticipated color of the year. Our conversation with her is like a crash course in decoding and assimilating the importance of color for those of us interested in creating a stimulating and harmonious home. Leatrice is not only an expert in color psychology, she has mentored hundreds of students across the fashion and interiors industries. We're so honored to have time with her.
So I think I mentioned to you in my initial email that I had heard you on NPR. It was it Marketplace?
Yes, it was Marketplace.
Okay, yeah. And I just loved hearing you on that. You just sounded like such an interesting person. And I'm driving and I'm pulling over to write your name down. And I said, Karen, we've got to find this woman.
Oh, that's funny. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Well, and then we both listened to it together because then the next time we got together, she's like, you've got to listen to this. And so we were listening. And I think what we were really particularly drawn to was this story of your mom painting the
everything
heater.
Oh yes,
the boiler.
You wouldn't leave my mother alone with a paint can very long because everything that didn't move got painted.
Yes. Well, this is Zandra. So because I love to paint things too, and frankly everything gets a coat of spray paint over at my house, but we had this one day where Zandra and I have children that go to the same school together, and so I had gone I had been at her house for a meeting, and then I had gone to pick the boys up from school. And just before I left, we were standing next to this bay window that she has, and it has beautiful black moldings in the windows. And I was like, you know what? That window seat would just look so great painted black. It would just make everything else, you know, pull together. And of course, by the time I had her son back home, it was already painted.
At least the first coat.
I like the way you think.
So anyway, we knew we would relate to you. So we're absolutely really excited to talk today.
Yes. Good. And so we thought maybe we would start with how you got started in your career. But if you could talk a little bit about the influence of your mom, and then how you really, because I heard the part about your mom, but I didn't really hear how you got started in the very beginning.
Okay. Well, my passion for color started very early in my childhood. My mother loved to paint everything and anything, including things that shouldn't have been painted, which led to almost a fire in our house because an old broiler got painted and she forgot and used it. and the house was filled with smoke. But for the most part, I would literally go off to school and one day and come home and find that the living room was an entirely new color. And you have to remember that I lived in Baltimore, which is a town with lots and lots of what we now call townhouses. But everybody lived in row houses in those days. And so they were small and it took very little effort to repaint a whole house if you wanted to. And my mother believed in, instead of spring cleaning, she believed in repainting. And not that she didn't spring clean, but the painting was definitely a part of the spring cleaning. So it was a big surprise in my life every year when I was very little. And then when I got older and I really developed a sense for color, my mother and I would have a conference about what the latest color should be. And, you know, that started early on in my childhood. I always had an eye for color and encouraged by my mother, of course, which is a big part of it. I mean, children need to have that kind of encouragement in order to express themselves. Mm-hmm. And, so I came to it very easily in my childhood. I found that I, of course, graduated high school, and every weekend when I would take classes, one of the things that always engaged me was design classes. And I also worked part-time, and it was usually in a shop that carried women's fashion, so I got very familiar with that. And I was kind of the go-to person, even as a teenager, as to what colors should go together and what should go in the window and that type of thing. And so when I eventually went to school, and I went to college after I graduated high school, I continued to take some design courses, but I realized I'd have to be practical as well. Business was always appealing to me. I started out with business, and then I made the switch to psychology because my interest in color really never waned, and I recognized that I would need to know something more about the psychology of color, and the aesthetics came rather easily, but the psychology was something I needed to apply. So my degrees are actually in psychology, even though I've studied design, and a lot of my work experience was in fashion. So it's kind of a marriage of all of those things. And then speaking of marriage, I met my husband when I was living in Washington, D.C., and he was a Californian and in the music business, and he heard me speak about color when I did a lecture to a group of school administrators. And he said to me, you know, you need to write a book about this and you need to get the book published because that's the only way you're going to get a copyright on it. Because, he was familiar with music copyrights. So I followed his advice, but that's a whole other story of how I got there. And ultimately, so that this story isn't endless, ultimately it came to the attention of Larry Herbert, who was then the originator of Pantone and the CEO. And someone, a mutual friend, had given him my book. He read it. He called me and said, I'd like to get together with you. I have some thoughts about, you know, where I want to go as far as color psychology is concerned. And so we met in California. I was living in Los Angeles at that point, and my husband was at that point with a movie studio. And so, of course, we met at the Polo Lounge at the Beverly Hills Hotel. I mean,
of course,
you know. And so we had this meeting, and a meeting of the minds. And we made an arrangement for me to continue to work long distance. I did not have to move back to New Jersey, where Pantone is based, but I could stay on the West Coast because there was this new thing that had been developed that Larry told me about, where I could send messages back and forth after 7 o'clock at night, and it was called a fax machine. Can you imagine? This was 1985, and the rest is history. You know, along came computers and more usage of them, and I continued to go back and forth to New York all the time. But I have always been one of those long distance commuters, if you will, having spent my career on the West Coast while Pantone's on the East Coast. And, you know, and since that time, we have taken it down, the Pantone Color Institute, down a very different path than when we started. You know, we started with newsletters, and now everybody, including yourself, not everybody, but those who have the talent and ability, are doing blogs and disseminating even more information about color. And so it has grown hugely since I first started. And I am, of course, I'm delighted with the idea that there's more ways to educate yourself and more information about color that's available to people.
Right. I have so many questions to ask.
I know.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the psychology aspect of it that you brought up. Sort of a brief primer on what color does to people and for people. I guess we'll focus on the home as opposed to fashion, although we are equally interested in fashion. But in terms of your surroundings and understanding your relationship to the space that you're in through the lens of color.
We'll be back after a quick break.
I assume you're here because you want a one-of-a-kind, personality-filled home, right? Well, in order to have that, you need to define and develop your signature style. When you do that, you're going to understand how to mix what you already have with new things you find, focusing on who you are and what you love, putting it all together in a cohesive way. So what's stopping you? Well, let me know if this sounds about right. Not enough time, not enough money, and a lack of creativity or design knowledge, which makes you feel overwhelmed and insecure about pulling the trigger and changing things up. This is why I created the Slow Style Society, to help you take action on making your dream home a reality. It's part social club for people who like to just geek out on design, and part hands-on learning experience where you get better and better at making decor decisions for each room in your home. And for the next few weeks, I'm offering all new members an additional one-on-one style session with yours truly. So I'll take you through the lessons so you know exactly what to focus on inside the Slow Style framework, in what order, and you'll have a personalized support system from me to get you there. Go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society so we can get started right away. Let's not wait for that imaginary perfect time to create your beautiful, meaningful home. Again, go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society. Okay, back to the episode.
Well, as I mentioned, I started out in fashion because when I was starting out, everybody understood that fashion and color were intertwined. That was, you didn't have to convince people of that. They understood that. But any other area that involved color, including interiors, was not as well understood. And people were really hungry for information about color in interiors. And of course, I recognized early on that even after I started to consult to Pantone, and I, by the way, I have my own business as well, which and I do consulting to all kinds of industries. But I recognized early on that there were so many questions being asked about color in the home, and people were most interested in tell me of the effect of the color, not only what goes with what, but what effects will come out of using those colors. And so for a follow-up book that I did after More Alive with Color, Colors for Your Every Mood, it's called, I started to do a lot of research, but well before that, because then the understanding started to grow on the level of the consumer that they needed to have more knowledge about color. So getting back to your question, though, we know, I mean, all three of us know that if we were to walk into the living room or the dining room or any room in our house, we look around and we say, it's getting a little tired. I could do something. I mean, you almost instinctively know that. And so the next step would be, what is the message in this room? What do we want to impart? What's the light that comes into the room? I mean, there's so many aspects of what will affect color that it's really, really important to have the answer to what I think the number one most important answer is, what do you want that room to feel like? How do you want to feel in this room? What level, what emotion do you want to get across that will be pleasing to you and others who live in that same environment, and how it will affect them and how it might affect people who come into the home? So it is a question of, you know, color is a lovely choice to make, and there are many colors to choose from, but that feeling of what does it need to say? And it is that means of expression that now is involved very much in Colors for the Home, as it is for practically every product that's out in the marketplace, whether it lives in the home or not.
You think about branding question, and yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That question is being asked. What does it mean? What does it say? And so the importance of knowing about the psychology of color, obviously, is of utmost importance to me.
Right. Why do you think people are afraid of color? Or people tend to think of themselves as not being able to pick a color, so I'm just going to stick with beige?
Well, I think what happens in a great many cases is, and think back to your own childhood, the first time you were given a box of crayons, you may not even remember the first crayon you held in your hand, but most children will color with great abandon. They're not inhibited. They simply do what feels good. They like the way the color looks on the page, and they have fun with it. Now, some of those children are encouraged by parents, let's hope a lot of them are, to do even more scribbling and coloring, because it's a great outlet for a child and a great way to express themselves. But as kids get older, and we know all of this happens, there is peer pressure, and there is also perhaps the parent who says, no, you need to do your math homework, forget about the, you know, coloring in the spaces. And could get very stern about that. So there are lots of reasons why, as children grow into adults, they may be less inclined to have this free and easy feeling about color. Not the least of which is criticism from others, where somebody walks into your house, or, you know, your best friend or your mother-in-law or whomever it might be, has an opinion about something that you've done. Oh, why did you use that color? Oh, that's, kind of hesitating. And there are many people who are very much intimidated by what others say. On the other hand, there are really people who don't have as much talent in putting colors together. They lack the confidence, and they need the help of a professional, which I am all for. I'm not saying that everyone in the world has the talent to do the decorating. Yet they need to be able to have a conversation with the professional that they choose to help them, a color consultant who might come in and help them make that choice. Because for a person who's a professional in doing this and literally makes a living doing this, they've had a lot of practice, and they are a little bit more objective about your surroundings than you are. So it's good to have that practiced eye to lean on. I'm certainly not saying that everyone has the talent or the ability, but I think the willingness to, you know, there are some people who will hire a color consultant and then not pay any attention to what they've said and go back to the default beige or white or whatever, because, again, they're concerned about the criticism that they might be getting, and so they do a default color. So my best advice is that there has to be a meeting of the minds. There has to be a comfort level in the colors that you feel comfortable with. And there has to be a certain sense of bravery as well. The courage to go with something that you that really speaks to you and that you love using. And perhaps you've gotten the advice to use. So I think it's kind of a marriage of all of those things. But again, courage is a key word.
Absolutely. I'm really curious, and I think our listeners will be too, about how you choose the Pantone color of the year, or colors, as is the case this year. And what do you feel the purpose of that is? It is so huge. I mean, in the blog world, there are so many posts out there waiting to be written as soon as Pantone chooses their color. Mm-hmm. And it is trend forecasting, and it is going to influence home decor and fashion and probably branding, at least for the year. And I think it feels like the secret world to us. So we're very interested in knowing kind of the what happens behind the scenes in terms of choosing that, and then why it's even out there as why do we need a color of the year?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I do get it a lot. We didn't start doing the color of the year until actually, I think it was 2000, when I started to get phone calls about the color of the millennium. Because, you know, the 1999 is probably when it started, even prior to that time. And it was an intriguing question because we do listen to what people write to us or call us and or have in conversation. You know, what do you think is the color of the millennium? And that kind of planted a seed as to there was so much interest in that. And we had to do some real homework. And when I say we, you know, there is a committee at Pantone that I work with, a team. And I am the lead member of that team. And we give a lot of thought to the reasoning for the color, the symbolism of the color. It's not just, you know, throwing darts at little Pantone chips and wherever they land for the year, that's the color of the year. It's not a fluffy decision that's made. It's done with a lot of thought. And because of my psychology background and my huge interest in the psychology of color, that is of utmost importance to me. So how do we arrive at that color? Well, we travel the world. Many of us on the team are traveling all the time. And we go to trade shows. I do a lot of presentations to businesses, to groups, to schools. I have the opportunity to talk to a lot of people or to hear from a lot of people and correspond with a lot of people. I do 2 classes a year for people who are interested in color and design. And my students are very thoughtful people who are, you know, who are color lovers, and engage them in any conversation about color, and they're happy to share their thoughts and ideas with you. So there are lots of resources, plus the fact that I've also done a color word association study that I have used extensively. It's in several of my books, as a matter of fact, because that gives me a lot of insights. There are times when people can't readily express why they like or dislike a particular color. And yet, if you ask them to write their first response, that gives you a big clue as to why you like or dislike the color. But in any event, getting back to color of the year, we start to look for what we call the ascending colors. Is there anything that in the color world that seems to be showing a bit more importance anywhere? And these are just little tidbits that we start to squirrel away. Are we seeing more deep tones? Are we seeing lighter tones? Are we seeing mid-tones? What's happening in the fashion world? What are the designers doing? What's happening in the art world, because this is important too. Is there an artist who's getting a lot of attention? Is this artist going to be shown around the world? Are more people going to start to pay attention to the artwork of this particular artist? We look at the Olympics and other sports events. Where is the host city? Is that going to be getting a lot of attention and a lot of buzz? What is the color that surrounds that host city, or is often thought of in terms of that city? We look at film because this is hugely important. We know that millions of people around the world not only watch the films, go to the films, but they also watch the Oscars and the Grammys and the Golden Globes, what the stars are wearing, what is, you know, what is permeating the atmosphere, so to speak. And many times they show clips from the films that show the interiors of the places they live in. And you both know that, you know, we've done this. You go to a movie and you are so taken by the interiors and the
you're distracted by them almost.
absolutely. If that's one of your loves and your passions, you can't help but be influenced by what you see. So you have to start drawing the dots together, you know, the lines between the dots and making the connections. And then you have to look at and you listen to, talk to people about what it is that they're looking for in their lives. Is there any one overriding theme that they're saying to you? Are they telling you that they're concerned about the future, that they need to feel less stress? But whatever it is the general mood that is going on in the world around us. And again, because I travel so much, I have the wonderful opportunity of speaking to people in different cultures. And that gives a more international perspective, if you will. And so by mid-year before, we're pretty much on the trail of where we think it's going. And then by fall, we are ready to make that commitment. And then the release is made in December.
It's just fascinating how many different aspects of life go into the decision and are, you know, the things that you have your eye on. Mm-hmm. It's such a diversity. It's fascinating.
It really is.
Yeah. We Karen and I both, we have, I think, four of your books at this point, and they span a number of years, even decades. And mm-hmm. It's been really interesting to see an evolution and how not only certain colors have popularity at certain eras. You have that one book that does go era by era, which I love. Mm-hmm. But also how people have embraced color, how they have used it in their homes. I feel like in this right now, because of blogs, there's a lot of attention paid to people doing things on their own and making their homes very much their own. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about how color theory has changed in your time with it and where you think we are now and where you think we're about to go.
Well, that's a very interesting question because it's one that comes up all the time. I just finished a class that I teach in Burbank, California once a year. And then I do the other one here on the island on Bainbridge once a year. And the students had a big discussion about how things have changed. And so it's very fresh in my mind. And I think about it all the time because I've seen quite an evolution of color. Now, when you talk about color theory, and I have done this in many of my books, I do use the color wheel as a basic start off point. But what has changed primarily is not that you are ignoring the tenets of the basic color wheel and how colors work together and how they react to each other. But what has changed is the way that we combine color and the rigid dogma that was attached to color in past years. Because I can remember as a child, my mother saying blue and green should never be seen. Now that, I mean, talk
was that
about
a thing? That was an actual saying?
that was a statement that was used. And you did not mix reds with pink. And I remember as a child thinking, but pink is part of the red family. Why would you excommunicate pink from the family? Even as a child, I would ask those questions and think about that. And the blue and green, I mean, we look to nature and what is a more beautiful rendition of a gorgeous blue sky and green meadow, you know, underneath that blue sky. And we never look at that combination and say, oh boy, Mother Nature really.
Right. What was she thinking?
Yeah. What was she thinking? And the same thing is true with any color that pops out in a flower, you know, be it a tulip, a rose, a dandelion, a marguerite, whatever. We never look at that against a blue sky and think, oh, what a terrible background for that color. So we are much more thoughtful about what we see in nature and how that can really skew some of those old concepts and ideas. So a lot of what is happening with color today, I have to say, is really because of the demographics. If you get an older client who was schooled in that old school way of thinking about never do this and always do that, then you're going to have some issues with that or that a younger person would have some issues with that, because they will look at it from a different perspective, a different set of logic that they're putting to it. And also, I do have to say that even though there were some awful examples on television, with the onslaught of all of those shows on TV, the home redo shows, and they're still out there, you find that this has opened people's minds and eyes to the potential, the possibility of doing something that really speaks to them. They may not like everything that they see, but they'll look at something and say, wow, you know, that's me. I could do that. And it's not that that information wasn't available in magazines. Certainly we've had shelter magazines forever, but somehow seeing it up on the screen in your home and viewing it and getting the rationale from the person who was running the show and whatever they would tell you, the reasons why, it really did open everyone's consciousness level to color and gave them feeling a little bit more freedom. And of course, the paint companies have done a fantastic job in getting information out there and disseminating it and helping to make people feel a little bit more confident. So I think that the old dogma has changed. And even in one of my first books, which is no longer in publication because it was done in 1990, and we only had, I think, 1,000, if that many, Pantone colors in the fashion and home system. Now we're up to 2,310. So you know, it's not even relevant anymore. But the information in that book, the book itself, is interesting, the Pantone Book of Color, and I do share that with my students all the time, because one of the areas of that book is about discord. And I know that people will look at that and say, well, why would you want to teach discord? Well, there are times when seemingly discordant colors really do work together. I mean, I can remember a time that if I said to anybody, and this, of course, is speaking in general terms, if I said purple and green, they would cringe and say, purple and green, who would use that together? But you see, the unsophisticated eye, the person who doesn't know that much about color, just probably thinks of secondary vibrant purple and the green, and maybe a bright green. And so, exactly, that's the first thing. It's just like red and green. If you mention that, the people think Christmas colors. Instead of thinking of the nuances of the red and the green, maybe that red gets a little bit more purplish, you know, a red purple, and the green gets a little bit more teal, a blue green. And then you've got what truly is the true complementary colors together, and they can be dynamic when used together. So it is a matter of educating people, of getting them to expand their thinking about color and not to think in such general terms, but to think of all of those. I'll use the word nuance again, because that is such an important word in color. There are little tweaks that you can give to color that can be just spectacular together. So what it takes is an open mind and those people who are, you know, more willing to experiment have to have a more open mind.
Yeah, absolutely. We love that reference to nuance and the idea of the different details that can be brought out based on a subtle change down the color wheel that's a very different way of thinking about a particular color.
Exactly.
So do you have a favorite color?
Or at least a current one.
Is that a silly question to ask you?
Well, it's like asking a mother, do you have a favorite
child? Child. Right. Yeah.
You might say it privately, but you won't say it in front of the children.
We would totally respect that.
Yeah. Now, I would have to say that I have been intrigued in the last few years by purple, variations of purple, not just, you know, the secondary purple, but all kinds of variations going into the fuchsia family and, you know, some of the lighter tones. Eggplant, I've always been fascinated with, or as the French say, aubergine, which is a much prettier way of putting
much,
it.
Much more sophisticated.
Yes, yes. So that color intrigues me because it's a little understood color family. People often are confused by purples, and that's because they're not trained in what to look for as an undertone. You know, bluer purples will give a very different message than red purples. Red purples are exciting and dynamic and closer to red, and so they have all of that sensuality that red implies. But if you take your purple and you veer it to the blue side, then it becomes very quiet and zen-like. So it's a whole other ball of wax. The other thing that fascinates me about the purples is that it is the color family that you can intermix so fantastically, every variation of cool to warm, and it all works together. It is just a creatively gorgeous statement, and I love the idea of opening people to the usage of purple or variations of purple. Now, again, anybody that's listening to this is going to think, oh, but I don't know if I want a purple living room. Well, but think about all the variations of the purple, even taking it down and graying it to the extent that it's just a slight purpled undertone in the gray. And so you have a whole different perspective on the color. So my message to people always is keep your mind open. Try not to be closed-minded about color because there are always ways to make it work.
Right. And I think that those different values that are within one color are amazing. I actually just recently painted my den, what had been purple for about 10 years, and that's a very long time for me to keep a color, but I loved it so much. It had a very bluish gray undertone, and it was very deep and very relaxing. And for our den, which is a very, very small room, it was just very cozy. We spent most of the time we spent in there was at night. And so it had a very warm feeling with the kind of lighting we had. Mm-hmm. But when you think of the word color, when you think of the word purple, honestly, the first thing that comes to my mind is My Little Pony or a little girl's skirt, because I feel like purple has been co-opted by the sort of in your face little girls must wear pink and purple.
Yes.
That's out there. And that's not a very attractive purple at all if that's the first color that comes to your mind.
Yes, exactly. and that's the issue. That's the problem, that if people see certain colors in their mind's eye and, you know, have an opinion about that. So you really have to understand the color and look at it and see what it is you're working with.
Yeah. As we wrap up here, I want to tag on to what Karen was asking you, a very personal question. We're wondering if you could talk a little bit about maybe a favorite room in your house or a current project that you're contemplating and what colors you're thinking about. Maybe there's a particular painting you have that is influencing you right now. Just something that kind of gives us a little peek inside how you personally are using color at the moment.
Well, that's an interesting question, because when you talked about purple in that you had used purple, my thoughts immediately go to my bedroom, which is not purple. It's periwinkle, which is, you know, on the cusp between blue and purple. And the psychological reasons behind it is that blue is often recommended as the color of a bedroom because of its relaxing qualities. But it can become cold and sterile if it's too vibrant. When I say vibrant, I mean if it's more saturated or it can become very cold because the undertones simply are not obvious. But add a touch of red to that blue and which is essentially what your periwinkle is, and you have a whole different dynamic going on. You've warmed up your blue. You still have the qualities that you want, that blue gives you, that more relaxing feel. And yet you've added just a tad of excitement by adding that dollop of red to the color. So periwinkle in a bedroom for people who say, you know, I like blues. I sort of like them or I don't like them at all. And I get that they could be used in a bedroom. Periwinkle could be the perfect answer for that. And I have to tell you that just like you, for me to keep colors as long as I have is really unusual. But I live in the Northwest. We have certain light that comes into the house or doesn't. And so I had to come up with a very thoughtful color scheme that would, for example, in my living room, bring the feeling of sunshine in, because we don't have a lot of sunlight in the wintertime. And so as a result, the practical considerations do have to be taken into account, but so does the aesthetic and the psychological. And for me, that periwinkle bedroom, honestly, I can't imagine not having color in my bedroom, even though I look around and think, oh, maybe I should do something completely different. It's just a feel good place. And it has a little bit more energy than a blue that would be too cold and sterile. And that's what we would want to stay away from. So it's the long-winded answer to your question is I'd have to go to the bedroom color before anything else.
Yeah, well, I love it. It sounds like the absolute perfect pick.
Do you think that people, sort of from the psychology side, do you think that people across the board sort of have the same reactions to color, or do you think that there are elements of our life experiences that play into that too?
Well, I think that there are generalities, and that's where you know, statistically, you can rely on your color word association, where you see the same responses coming up again and again and again about a particular color. And that is largely because the human mind attaches itself so much to color and the way it's used in nature as a base point for their response to color. However, having said that, we know that each of us has had different life experiences. And for children, and this is where we first establish our feelings about color, for children, anything that made them happy, sad, or had some trauma attached to it is often attached to the colors that they choose. And when you grow into an adult, you sometimes forget why it is you liked or disliked a color. Or other times, you know immediately, it's the first tricycle you ever got. It came apple red, and you were so excited about it, you never forgot the color, and you love it no matter how it's used. So each of us has our own personal reaction to color, and we can't deny that. So if you were doing a consult for someone, even when I'm working with a big company and I'm sitting down with a CEO or somebody at the top level, and immediately I can start to read what their likes and dislikes are, because you show them and their body language will tell you how they're responding, or maybe even sometimes more than their body language, they're going to tell you. And that's the hardest thing to work with, because you know that this color is going to be perfect for the widget that they're manufacturing and putting out in the marketplace. But if that person has a predilection to loving that color or hating it for whatever personal reason, you've got to overcome that hurdle. And I have to say, as a professional consultant, they've hired me, they are paying me to do this job. And so most everyone will listen and try to put their own personal views aside. But with some companies, it is tougher because the people at the top have these opinions about color, and you've got to wade through all of that and give them more pragmatic reasons for using it. And I tell my students all the time, you've got to separate your professional from your personal self when it comes to color choice. No question of that.
Right. Absolutely. This has been absolutely fascinating.
Yes,
I love this. And I also just figured out why purple is one of my favorite colors, because my first tricycle
was purple
with silver sparkles in it.
Well, there you go.
And when she started talking about that, I literally like grinned from ear to ear. Like that tricycle made me very happy.
And you never fell off that bike. You see, if you've fallen off that bike.
Right.
didn't go out and play for a week with your friends, that purple might have had a totally different feeling.
Absolutely. That's so funny. So,
well, I think the key is sparkles, too. There's something, the shimmer.
No question. Sparkle has a lot to do with it.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. This has been
delightful. We'd like to introduce you to this week's sponsor, Color House Paint. We are really excited about this company on so many levels. First, their color palette is fantastic. It's nuanced, vibrant, and layered. The palette of 128 interior hues is developed by artists, which makes choosing the perfect shade for your project a fun experience. Plus, they offer free online color consultations on their website. Second, they are committed to producing products that don't hurt you or the environment. For us, that means we can paint our homes without getting headaches from toxic fumes, because their paints contain no VOCs, chemical solvents, or reproductive toxins. And finally, Color House is a source of creative inspiration. They have a wonderful blog full of DIY projects, and they are active on social media, inspiring all of us to add color to our lives. Find out more at colorhousepaint.com.
Thanks so much for listening. If you've liked what you've heard, we'd really appreciate if you take a moment to rate us on iTunes.
And if you'd like more fearless decorating ideas from Little Yellow Couch, sign up for our newsletter at littleyellowcouch.com, and you'll receive our free e-magazine called 5 Ways to Decorate with Books.
Connection, style, substance.
That's Little Yellow Couch. Thanks so much for listening. I know your time is valuable, and I really do appreciate you spending it with me. And please, please, please take a minute to leave a review for Slow Style Home wherever you get your podcasts. It honestly does help keep this show on the air, and your feedback is highly valuable to me. Have a great day, and I'll be back in your earbuds soon. Bye for now.